Chapter 77. Sops, the bride's father, our good friend there, is a noble person, and I am proud to know him. Great uproar. He is a kind, excellent, independent, spirited, fine-hearted, hospitable, liberal man.
Enthusiastic shouts from the poor relations, at all the adjectives, and especially at the two last,
that his daughter may enjoy all the happiness, even he can desire, and that he may derive from the contemplation of her felicity all the gratification of heart and peace of mind which he so well deserves, is, I am persuaded, our united wish. So, let us drink their healths, and wish them prolonged life, and every blessing.
Mr. Pickwick concluded amidst a whirlwind of applause, and once more were the lungs of the supernumeraries, under Mr. Weller's command, brought into active and efficient operation. Mr. Wardle proposed Mr. Pickwick. Mr. Pickwick proposed the old lady. Mr. Snodgrass proposed Mr. Wardle. Mr. Wardle proposed Mr. Snodgrass. One of the poor relations proposed Mr. Tubman, and the other poor relation proposed Mr. Winkle. All was happiness and festivity, until the mysterious disappearance of both the poor relations beneath the table warned the party that it was time to adjourn. At dinner they met again, after a 25-mile walk, undertaken by the males at Wardle's recommendation, to get rid of the effects of the wine at breakfast. The poor relations had kept in bed all day, with the view of attaining the same happy consummation, but, as they had been unsuccessful, they stopped there. Mr. Weller kept the domestics in a state of perpetual hilarity, and the fat boy divided his time into small alternate allotments of eating and sleeping. The dinner was as hearty and affair as the breakfast, and was quite as noisy, without the tears. Then came the dessert and some more toasts. Then came the tea and coffee, and then, the ball. The best sitting room at Manor Farm was a good, long, dark paneled room with a high chimney piece, and a capacious chimney, up which you could have driven one of the new patent cabs, wheels and all. At the upper end of the room, seated in a shady bower of holly and evergreens were the two best fiddlers, and the only harp, in all Muggleton. In all sorts of recesses, and on all kinds of brackets, stood massive old silver candlesticks with four branches each. The carpet was up, the candles burned bright, the fire blazed and crackled on the hearth, and merry voices and light-hearted laughter rang through the room. If any of the old English yeomen had turned into fairies when they died, it was just the place in which they would have held their revels. If anything could have added to the interest of this agreeable scene, it would have been the remarkable fact of Mr. Pickwick's appearing without his gaiters, for the first time within the memory of his oldest friends. "You mean to dance?" said Wardle. "Of course I do," replied Mr. Pickwick. "Don't you see I am dressed for the purpose?" Mr. Pickwick called attention to his speckled silk stockings, and smartly tied pumps.
"You in silk stockings?"
exclaimed Mr. Tubman jocosely.
"And why not, sir, why not?"
said Mr. Pickwick, turning warmly upon him.
"Oh, of course there is no reason why you shouldn't wear them," responded Mr. Tubman.
"I imagine not, sir, I imagine not," said Mr. Pickwick, in a very peremptory tone.
Mr. Tubman had contemplated a laugh, but he found it was a serious matter, so he looked grave, and said they were a pretty pattern.
"I hope they are," said Mr. Pickwick, fixing his eyes upon his friend.
"You see nothing extraordinary in the stockings, I trust, sir?"
"Certainly not."
"Oh, certainly not," replied Mr. Tubman. He walked away, and Mr. Pickwick's countenance resumed its customary benign expression.
"We are all ready, I believe," said Mr. Pickwick, who was stationed with the old lady at the top of the dance, and had already made four false starts, in his excessive anxiety to commence.
"Then begin at once," said Wardle.
"Now," apostrophe, up struck the two fiddles and the one harp, and off went Mr. Pickwick in two hands across, when there was a general clapping of hands, and a cry of stop, stop, apostrophe, apostrophe, what's the matter? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Pickwick, who was only brought to, by the fiddles and harp desisting, and could have been stopped by no other earthly power, if the house had been on fire. Where's Arabella Allen? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried a dozen voices. And Winkle? Apostrophe, added Mr. Tupman. Here we are. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed that gentleman, emerging with his pretty companion from the corner. As he did so, it would have been hard to tell which was the redder in the face, he or the young lady with the black eyes. What an extraordinary thing it is, Winkle, apostrophe, said Mr. Pickwick, rather pettishly, that you couldn't have taken your place before. Apostrophe, not at all extraordinary, apostrophe, said Mr. Winkle. Well, apostrophe, said Mr. Pickwick, with a very expressive smile, as his eyes rested on Arabella, well, I don't know that it was extraordinary either, after all. Apostrophe, however, there was no time to think more about the matter, for the fiddles and harp began in real earnest. Away went Mr. Pickwick hands across down the middle to the very end of the room, and halfway up the chimney, back again to the door, who set everywhere loud stamp on the ground ready for the next couple, off again all the figure over once more another stamp, to beat out the time next couple, and the next again never was such going. At last, after they had reached the bottom of the dance, and full 14 couple after the old lady had retired in an exhausted state, and the clergyman's wife had been substituted in her stead, did that gentleman, when there was no demand whatever on his exertions, keep perpetually dancing in his place, to keep time to the music, smiling on his partner all the while with a blandness of demeanor which baffles all description. Long before Mr. Pickwick was weary of dancing, the newly married couple had retired from the scene. There was a glorious supper downstairs, notwithstanding, and a good long sitting after it. And when Mr. Pickwick awoke, late the next morning, he had a confused recollection of having, severally and confidentially, invited somewhere about 45 people, to dine with him at the George and Vulture, the very first time they came to London, which Mr. Pickwick rightly considered a pretty certain indication of his having taken something besides exercise, on the previous night. And so your family has games in the kitchen tonight, my dear, has they? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Sam of Emma. Yes, Mr. Weller, apostrophe, replied Emma, we always have on Christmas Eve. Master wouldn't neglect to keep it up on any account. Apostrophe, your master's a worry pretty notion of keeping anything up, my dear, apostrophe, said Mr. Weller. I never see such a sensible sort of man as he is, or such a reglar gentleman. Apostrophe, oh, that he is. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the fat boy, joining in the conversation. Don't he breed nice pork? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the fat youth gave a semi-cannibalic leer at Mr. Weller, as he thought of the roast legs and gravy. Oh, you woke up, at last, have you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Sam. The fat boy nodded. I'll tell you what it is, young boa constructor, apostrophe, said Mr. Weller impressively. If you don't sleep a little less, and exercise a little more, when you comes to be a man you'll lay yourself open to the same sort of personal inconvenience as was inflicted on the old gentleman as wore the pigtail. Apostrophe, what did they do to him? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired the fat boy, in a faltering voice. I'm a going to tell you, apostrophe, replied Mr. Weller. He was one o' the largest patterns as was ever turned out reglar fat man, as hadn't caught a glimpse of his own shoes for 45 year. Apostrophe, lore. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Emma. No, that he hadn't, my dear, apostrophe, said Mr. Weller, and if you'd put an exact model of his own legs on the dining table afore him, he wouldn't ha' known 'em. Well, he always walks to his office with a very handsome gold watch chain hanging out, about a foot and a quarter, and a gold watch in his fob pocket as was worth I'm afraid to say how much, but as much as a watch can be a large, heavy, round manufacturer, as stout for a watch, as he was for a man, and with a big face in proportion. You'd better not carry that here watch, says the old gentleman's friends. You'll be robbed on it, says they. Shall I? Says he. Yes, you will, says they. Well, says he, I should like to see the thief as could get this here watch out, for I'm blessed, if I ever can, it's such a tight fit, says he, and whenever I vance to know what's o'clock, I'm obliged to stare into the baker's shops, he says. Well, then he laughs as hearty as if he was a-going to pieces, and out he walks a-gin with his powdered head and pigtail, and rolls down the strand with the chain hanging out further than ever, and the great round watch almost busting through his grey kersey smalls. There weren't a pickpocket in all London as didn't take a pull at that chain, but the chain ud never break, and the watch ud never come out, so they soon got tired of dragging such a heavy old gentleman along the pavement, and he'd go home and laugh till the pigtail vibrated like the pendulum of a Dutch clock. At last, one day the old gentleman was a-rolling along, and he sees a pickpocket as he know it by sight, a-coming up, arm in arm with a little boy with a very large head. Here's a game, says the old gentleman to himself, they're a-going to have another try, but it won't do. So he begins a-chuckling very hearty, when, all of a sudden, the little boy leaves hold of the pickpocket's arm, and rushes head foremost straight into the old gentleman's stomach, and for a moment doubles him right up with the pain. Murder, says the old gentleman. All right, sir, says the pickpocket, a-whisperin' in his ear. And when he come straight agin, the watch and chain was gone, and what's worse than that, the old gentleman's digestion was all wrong ever afterwards, to the very last day of his life. So just you look about you, young feller, and take care you don't get too fat. Apostrophe, as Mr. Weller concluded this moral tale, with which the fat boy appeared much affected, they all three repaired to the large kitchen, in which the family were by this time assembled, according to annual custom on Christmas Eve, observed by old Wardle's forefathers from time immemorial. From the center of the ceiling of this kitchen, old Wardle had just suspended, with his own hands, a huge branch of mistletoe, and this same branch of mistletoe instantaneously gave rise to a scene of general and most delightful struggling and confusion, in the midst of which, Mr. Pickwick, with a gallantry that would have done honor to a descendant of Lady Tullymglower herself, took the old lady by the hand, led her beneath the mystic branch, and saluted her in all courtesy and decorum. The old lady submitted to this piece of practical politeness with all the dignity which befitted so important and serious a solemnity, but the younger ladies, not being so thoroughly imbued with a superstitious veneration for the custom, or imagining that the value of a salute is very much enhanced if it cost a little trouble to obtain it, screamed and struggled, and ran into corners, and threatened and remonstrated, and did everything but leave the room, until some of the less adventurous gentlemen were on the point of desisting, when they all at once found it useless to resist any longer, and submitted to be kissed with a good grace. Mr. Winkle kissed the young lady with the black eyes, and Mr. Snodgrass kissed Emily, and Mr. Weller, not being particular about the form of being under the mistletoe, kissed Emma and the other female servants, just as he caught them. As to the poor relations, they kissed everybody, not even excepting the plainer portions of the young lady visitors, who, in their excessive confusion, ran right under the mistletoe, as soon as it was hung up, without knowing it. Wardle stood with his back to the fire, surveying the whole scene, with the utmost satisfaction, and the fat boy took the opportunity of appropriating to his own use, and summarily devouring, a particularly fine mince pie that had been carefully put by, for somebody else. Now, the screaming had subsided, and faces were in a glow, and curls in a tangle, and Mr. Pickwick, after kissing the old lady as before mentioned, was standing under the mistletoe, looking with a very pleased countenance on all that was passing around him, when the young lady with the black eyes, after a little whispering with the other young ladies, made a sudden dart forward, and, putting her arm round Mr. Pickwick's neck, saluted him affectionately on the left cheek, and before Mr. Pickwick distinctly knew what was the matter, he was surrounded by the whole body, and kissed by every one of them. It was a pleasant thing to see Mr. Pickwick in the center of the group, now pulled this way, and then that, and first kissed on the chin, and then on the nose, and then on the spectacles, and to hear the peals of laughter which were raised on every side. But it was a still more pleasant thing to see Mr. Pickwick, blinded shortly afterwards with a silk handkerchief, falling up against the wall, and scrambling in two corners, and going through all the mysteries of blind man's buff, with the utmost relish for the game, until at last he caught one of the poor relations, and then had to evade the blind man himself, which he did with a nimbleness and agility that elicited the admiration and applause of all beholders. The poor relations caught the people who they thought would like it, and, when the game flagged, got caught themselves. When they all tired of blind man's buff, there was a great game at snapdragon, and when fingers enough were burned with that, and all the raisins were gone, they sat down by the huge fire of blazing logs to a substantial supper, and a mighty bowl of wassail, something smaller than an ordinary wash-house copper, in which the hot apples were hissing, and bubbling with a rich look, and a jolly sound, that were perfectly irresistible. This, apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick, looking round him, this is, indeed, comfort. Apostrophe our invariable custom, apostrophe replied Mr. Wardle. Everybody sits down with us on Christmas Eve, as you see them now servants and all, and here we wait, until the clock strikes 12, to usher Christmas in, and beguile the time with forfeits and old stories. Trundle, my boy, rake up the fire. Apostrophe, up flew the bright sparks in myriads as the logs were stirred. The deep red blaze sent forth a rich glow, that penetrated into the farthest corner of the room, and cast its cheerful tint on every face. Come, apostrophe said Wardle, a song, a Christmas song. I'll give you one, in default of a better. Apostrophe, bravo. Apostrophe, apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick. Fill up, apostrophe cried Wardle. It will be 2 hours, good, before you see the bottom of the bowl through the deep rich color of the wassail. Fill up all round, and now for the song. Apostrophe, thus saying, the merry old gentleman, in a good, round, sturdy voice, commenced without more ado. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.